I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Ferrara, and we have got a jam-packed show for you today. We're going to be joined at 4:05 by Lee Smith. Lee Smith was a star player at Powell High School. His dad played for the University of Tennessee, was an offensive lineman on the 1985 SEC championship team that won the Sugar Bowl. We'll visit with him. He has just retired from the NFL. He's got an incredible story to tell, and he's opening up a gym in Knoxville. So we'll visit with him about that. 4:35, we got Mike Murray of the Ice Bears to talk about how they have been, what a great year they have had so far. Brent Hubbs of AllQuest.com, he joins us in the 5 o'clock hour. We'll talk Tennessee basketball, Tennessee football recruiting, and more, and take your phone calls, of course. 6:15, Ben Baby of ESPN joins us. He covers the Cincinnati Bengals. And, boy, what a story they have been this year, led by Joe Burrow. We will also have comments from Tennessee coach Rick Barnes, postgame comments from last night's contest, and Kelly Harper, the Lady Vols, fourth-ranked Lady Vols, take on Auburn tonight. The winless Auburn team, although somewhat dangerous, we'll explain that later. We'll hear from Kelly Harper before Tennessee takes on Auburn that game tonight at 8 o'clock. Vince Ferrara, how are you doing?
I'm good, Jimmy. Hope you're doing well. And our John Wilkerson will be on the call that Lady Vols game. He's filling in for Mickey Dearstone tonight. That's
yes,
why I'm in for him.
Exactly. So you don't want to miss that. Also, you don't want to miss an interview with Lee Smith. I think that's going to be very special. He's had an incredible story to tell. All right, let's get to our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters, technology you need, people that you can trust. Tennessee, despite going about 5 minutes without even getting off a shot, there were 7 turnovers. It looked like the Keystone Cops out there. They end up after a 13-0 run by Florida. They come back, and then Florida goes on another run. Tennessee answers it, and then Tennessee pulls away in the second half, down by 8 at halftime. But they end up winning 78-71 over the Florida Gators. Santiago Vescovi with another strong performance, 23 points, ties his career high. He was 5 of 8 on three-pointers. You also had 17 points from Kennedy Chandler. Kennedy Chandler was 11 of 24 at the foul line in SEC games. We asked Rick Barnes about the free throw shooting of Chandler, and he said he's just backing up when he shoots. If he'll just stop doing that, he'll be fine. He was fine last night, 6 of 6. So was Vescovi, 6 of 6. And then Zakai Ziegler came off the bench, gave him 11 points and 6 rebounds, which is a high for him, along with 4 assists. So, Vince, these were the key numbers, I thought, from last night's game. I'll get your take on it. Number one, Tennessee, 22 assists on 25 made field goals. Secondly, 17 of 18 at the foul line. They missed a first free throw. They didn't miss after that. Rebounds, a 34-24 edge, and three-point shooting, 11 of 24 on threes for the Vols. Your thoughts on those numbers or any other numbers you think were important from last night's game?
Yeah, first the free throws. You kind of alluded to it yesterday. You asked Mark Pankratz about it, and Kennedy Chandler is only shooting 46% from the free throw line in SEC play and went 6 for 6 last night. Ended up being a 7-point win for the Vols, so those are some big free throws. And it kind of mirrored the team. The team was shooting 66% from the free throw line in SEC play, 94%, 7 of 18, as you mentioned, in the game last night. And then the keys, what coaches always want, and Barnes has said it, coaches say it all the time, you want more makes from the free throw line than your opponent attempts. And Florida was 9 for 9 from the free throw line, and Tennessee had the 17 makes. Now, honestly, I can't remember a game where there were so few missed free throws combined. Yeah. So that was interesting. Assist to turnover ratio, obviously the turnovers were huge early on, but your point, the 22 assists to the 25 total made field goals, that's shared basketball, sharing the basketball. And I think Tennessee, when they shoot their highest percentage, is when they do that. And you saw it not only with those just overall from the floor, but from the three-point line as well, because I never felt like in this game Tennessee was just jacking up threes for the sake of, hey, we're in a three fest right now, let's just trade threes. It seemed they were driving, even if they weren't getting all the way to the lane, Jimmy, they were at least threatening to getting in, you know, driving lanes and then cut. or down the baseline and then dish out. So a lot of those outside of that stretch where they couldn't even get a shot off, I thought they did a good job of moving the basketball. You know, the rebound margin was even more lopsided in the first half, and Tennessee was down 8. So I didn't think the rebounding was necessarily a huge factor in the game, but obviously they cleaned things up in the second half. And, you know, for the first time in a while, Tennessee actually had the edge in fast break points. It wasn't a massive part of the game, but we were talking about those live ball turnovers yesterday that Kelly Harper had been talking about. You don't want to give those freebies up. I didn't think Tennessee gave up, for the most part, a whole lot of easy baskets to Florida like some teams have been able to get. And so the fact that Tennessee got some and more than the opponent, I thought that was a plus and a little bit different than we've seen as well.
It was Florida's third game in 5 days, and Tennessee came out with some pressure. And I wondered if Tennessee pressed early, and they got burned by it, but I wonder if they pressed early trying to wear Florida out just a little bit. I don't know if you could say that it worked, but Tennessee outscored Florida 15 in the second half, so maybe it did. The other part of that was, and Mark Pankratz pointed this out, I asked him about Euros Plavsic and Colin Castleton not playing for Florida. And Pankratz said he thinks that Euros would be a non-factor. Why? Because Florida was going to go with a bit of a smaller lineup, and when Florida did, Plavsic was a non-factor. He had 0 points. He had 1 rebound, only played 9 minutes. As Tennessee countered with a smaller lineup as well. So, ends up being a good win for Tennessee. Some of the comments from Rick Barnes afterward, he talked about Tennessee was 9 for 9 in the last 4 minutes of the game at the foul line. He said that their guards are having too many turnovers. He said they're not respecting the game. They're not respecting the ball. They're not respecting their teammates. I don't know if I've ever coached a game in my career where we go 5 minutes without taking a shot. I'm sitting here thinking, what in the world is going on here? He complimented Justin Powell's defense, saying he's making a conscious effort to not be a weak link on the defensive end. Said that Tennessee would not have won the game without John Fulkerson last night. Fulkerson came in, gave him some inside scoring. He ended up with 9 points for Tennessee, and he was 3 of 3 at the foul line and had a key 3-point play. Barnes once again complimented Vescovi, talking about how he moves without the ball. He's a very intelligent player. And then he created a number of points for Fulkerson because guys that were guarding him wouldn't leave him, and that left Fulkerson a little bit open to make some plays. He kind of got on Olivier Komwa, saying he gets the ball in there sometimes close, and then he doesn't even think about scoring. He complimented Mike White, which is interesting. He said, Mike made one of the smartest moves I've ever seen in my life as a coach. They gave him the ball late in the game. They ruled it was Florida's ball, and Mike White said, hey, go check that. Well, when they went to check it, that was like a free timeout, and then White drew up a play, and they got a 3-pointer out of it. Barnes said, I've never seen that done in my life. That's a really smart basketball play. So I don't remember seeing that either. Smart play or taking advantage of the rules, whatever it is, it worked for him. What did you think of that?
Well, I thought it was interesting, but you heard the follow-up, right? I don't know if you were going to mention it or not, because there was a follow-up to that. Barnes said, don't be mistaken. That's going to be addressed in the rules committee, because he's on that rules committee.
Yeah, he is.
So he said they're absolutely going to address that. I don't know what you do about that. Like, just because you're getting the ball, can you call for replay on a call that's in your favor? Like, it seems like in theory you should be able to correct it if it's a close enough call, but coaches aren't going to ask for that replay if they aren't absolute that it's going their way. It's only when it goes against them that they're usually going to ask for it. So I don't know what you could, enforce in that situation, Jimmy.
I don't either, but I think White got what he wanted. He wanted to have a timeout, a free timeout to set up a play, knowing he was going to have the ball anyway. I don't know what you do. Maybe you slap him with a technical and say, no, you can't do that. I don't know.
Or on those replays, you don't allow those teams to get a timeout.
They
have to stay on the court.
Right. Yep. That's another way you could handle it. Let's see. Also, Barnes got on Uros Plavsic a little bit. He said that Plavsic was talking to the other team's bench, and I think that's where he got his technical. Barnes said, that's not going to happen. I don't want any player on our team disrespecting any other coaching staff. Being immature is what I call it. Well, if you recall years ago when Rick Barnes got into it with Dean Smith started saying something to one of Barnes' players. I guess it was at Clemson. And Barnes didn't appreciate that. So we know his position on that type of thing. He also said, Barnes did, that you want to play with emotion and fire, but we're not going to get technicals. And he said that's one reason that Vescovi was on the bench in the first half, was that one of the fouls he got was a technical foul. Let's see. And then he complimented once again Zakai Ziegler, who came off the bench with a strong performance. So,
well, Jimmy, real quick, on Vescovi, he was asked about that, and he said that he and the Florida player got up and they were just looking at each other. He said they didn't touch each other. Yeah. They didn't say anything, and he still got called for that. So he's like, what am I supposed to do? So it doesn't surprise me. It was another terribly officiated game.
Yes, it was.
On all fronts last night. And then as far as Uros, Rick Barnes said, hey, we're going to carry ourselves to class. You know, there was another verbal exchange after this one. And one Florida player had to be restrained. He was trying to charge the Tennessee bench as they took a route towards the Tennessee bench before leaving. And then there are Tennessee players giving them the chomp as they were walking back to the sideline and Florida was starting to walk away. So they had to be separated again. And there was a lot of verbiage. And then, of course, that only egged on the fans to get on the Florida players and give them the chomp in their face on their way out. So I don't think Rick Barnes was too crazy about how Tennessee kind of handled that part of it. Tennessee's getting into these an awful lot these days.
Yeah, they are. It's Florida. It's LSU. Probably another one I'm not thinking about, but you're right. Other SEC games last night, you had South Carolina over Vanderbilt, 70-61. LSU scored the last 9 points to beat A&M, 70-64. Arkansas over Ole Miss, 64-55. So the standings in the SEC, boy, you got a bunch of them that'll right there together jumble up. So Auburn's 8-0, Kentucky 6-2. Arkansas and Tennessee are 5-3. A&M and Mississippi State 4-3. LSU and Alabama 4-4. South Carolina 3-4. Florida 3-5. A whole lot of teams with five wins or five losses. A whole lot of them mixed in there together. So, all right. And then three teams are undefeated at home. Kentucky's 13-0, Tennessee 11-0, Auburn 10-0. Lady Vols take on Auburn tonight. That's at 8 o'clock. Auburn had won a conference game. They have lost a 3-point game and a 7-point game to Alabama, lost in overtime to Missouri, lost by 5 to Florida, which is why Kelly Harper said that is a dangerous team, and she said anytime you let up, bad things happen. One bad thing that could happen, Tennessee is averaging 17.5 turnovers per game. Auburn forces 17.5 turnovers per game. Tennessee's going to have to be mindful of that. As far as Lady Vols in softball, USA softball, he's come out with a top 50 watch list. Keke Malloy is on it, as is Ashley Rogers. Malloy had 50 runs scored, 59 hits, 37 stolen bases last year. Rogers had 26 wins, led the SEC with a 1.32 earned run average, led the SEC in opponent batting average at 132, and was second in the league in strikeouts at 296. Lady Vols open the season February the 11th. Australian Open, you got Ash Barty defeating Madison Keys, 6-1, 6-3. Danielle Collins defeated Ig Swiatek, 6-4, 6-1. They will be in the finals. Ash Barty is the first Australian woman to make it to the finals since 1980. That was Wendy Turnbull. And there hasn't been an Aussie to win it since 1978. Danielle Collins has reached her first major final. And Barty has won two majors along the way. Denver has hired Green Bay offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett. So some are speculating maybe Aaron Rodgers heads to Denver. Hackett in his years at Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers, Rodgers threw 111 touchdown passes against 13 interceptions and was a 2020 MVP. Vince, do you think that this is writing on the wall that Rodgers will end up at Denver? And the second part of that question is, does Rodgers have a better chance winning a Super Bowl if he stays at Green Bay or goes to Denver?
Huh, it's a great question. If the first one, I think it certainly could be a factor in helping you there. There's already been discussions that Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams would like to team up and go to Denver. They have a roster that can get a massive jolt with an elite quarterback and maybe the best wide receiver in all of football. But specifically on Rodgers, I wonder how much they have an indication that Rodgers, you know, would come. Is he your best candidate regardless, or are you making this move in hopes of landing Rodgers as well? So I you know, there's some question there, and I think it's more difficult for him to go to the AFC than Green Bay. Now, he hasn't been able to cash in all that much in the NFC, but I guess to win a Super Bowl, you're going to have to do it anyway. You're going to have to, you know, get past the Mahomes and the Josh Allens anyway. Just there's so many of them there. But I don't know. It may be the fresh start, the different personnel around them. Maybe he feels like the dynamics are different and he could win it there. But, man, what a ridiculous conference if he was there, Jimmy, with Mahomes, yeah. Justin Herbert, and you know, Derek Carr if he's still with the Raiders. I mean, just insanity. And then in the conference as well, you got Joe Burrow, you got Josh Allen, you got Lamar Jackson. Yeah, I don't know. That's such a gauntlet. But it doesn't seem like that Rodgers would be fazed by that.
Well, maybe he's trying to get away from Garoppolo.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens there. And then you don't know what those rosters are going to look like at Green Bay, right, and Denver when all this is settled. All right, the Bears hire Colts defensive coordinator Matt Eberflus is a former assistant coach at Missouri. Big Ben retires. Everybody knew that was coming. He was the youngest to ever win a Super Bowl at 23. He had two Super Bowl titles. Dan Quinn said he's going to remain at Dallas as a defensive coordinator. Interesting. Another note I want to mention, and this is a great cause. I want people to – we'll mention this again later. But Tailgate for Calls is a fundraiser. It's coming up February the 26th. It'll be at Calhoun's on the River. It'll start at 9:30 a.m. That's the same day that Tennessee plays Auburn and Bruce Pearl. For a small donation, they will have beer available for you. There will also be some food. They will have a guest speaker. This benefits Wounded Warrior Foundation. So it's a really neat cause. We'll mention that again at a later date to remind you. But that's February the 26th, Calhoun's on the River. For a donation, you can enjoy some beer. They got food and a guest speaker. And Wounded Warrior Foundation is the beneficiary. So, and the Tennessee men's tennis team, they remain number one in the ITA poll. They got all 12 first place votes. Their next action will be in the ITA kickoff weekend. That's January 28 to 29. And if they win both of those matches, they will go to the ITA Indoor Nationals February 18 to 21 in Seattle. Chris Woodruff's done a great job with that team. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Ferrar. Kennedy Chandler has been named one of 15 players on the Naismith Defensive Player of the Year watch list. This is from the Atlanta Tip-Off Club. Chandler's one of three freshmen and one of four SEC players on the list. Through 18 games, he's posted 39 steals, six block shots. He's averaging 2.2 steals per game. That's tied for second among Division I freshmen, tied for 20th among all players. And through the first five SEC games alone, Chandler recorded 17 steals. He ranks among the SEC leaders in steals. Vince, that's a nice honor for Kennedy Chandler to be on that watch list.
Yeah, for sure. And I think he's picked up his defense. Or, you know, there's some breakdowns at times. And, you know, there was more inconsistencies early on in the year defensively. But, you know, at times maybe a missed shot offensively, whether it's a missed layup or something, would, you know, turn into a breakdown or not getting back on defense. So, I don't know that he's going to win it, but he's a terrific a kid that came in with already a defensive mindset that allows himself to be coached hard on defense, keeps working at it, and has gotten better as the year has gone on from that standpoint. He's got the steals to show for it, super quick. So, yeah, I think he's worthy of being on the list for sure.
So good for him for that. Then as far as the NBA, I was looking at this, and there are three teams to me that have really that have been surprises. won the Cleveland Cavaliers. This is the first time in 25 years they've been in the top three in the East Division when they didn't have LeBron James this deep into the season. The Chicago Bulls are also off to a very good start. Didn't see that coming. So the Bulls are 31-17. They're a half game back of the Heat in the East. The Cavs are 30-19. They're a game and a half back. They got a better record than the Nets, a better record than Milwaukee, a better record than Philadelphia. And then in the Western Conference, the Suns are 38-9, Golden State 35-1. But the third team that has surprised me, Memphis, 33-17. John Morant has been fantastic. And even when they didn't have him, they won like eight or nine in a row. But those three teams, the Cavs, the Bulls, and the Grizzlies, Vince, those three teams have really impressed me. They've been better than I thought they would be entering the season.
No, I agree. And the Cleveland Cavaliers, they're so young. But, man, and they've drafted from the SEC as well with Garland and a number of other players on that Cavs roster. The Cavs actually have the best point differential in the entire Eastern Conference, like better than the Heat or the Bulls. And they've been impressive throughout the year. Good, decent away record as well. So, Cleveland has been terrific. If you can be a young team and get home court advantage in the playoffs, that's going to be big. With the expanded playoff, you still have, I think some weakness at the bottom of that Eastern Conference. But in the Western Conference, it's so loaded. And for Memphis to be that three seed, three games behind Golden State, Ja Morant it has been amazing this year. But he's gotten the worthy attention because the team has also been good as well. So they're not just Ja Morant. They've worked on that roster and the pieces, and Epons being with the Grizzlies is cool for him to be a part of a winner. And you think about the athletes of Epons and Ja Morant on the same roster. So, the Grizzlies have been a huge pleasant surprise in the West.
The Lady Vols take on Auburn tonight. And this is an Auburn team that hadn't won a conference game. They've had a couple of close calls. They've got three players that average in double figures. They got a 6'5" transfer from Texas who's just now working her way into the lineup. And so even though their record is poor, Kelly Harper thinks this is a difficult team to deal with. Auburn had to play a COVID makeup game on Tuesday. And Kelly Harper was asked about this. These are some comments from the Lady Vols head coach, Kelly Harper.
Auburn's playing a rematch game, a rematch postponed game against Kentucky tonight. Any advantage just two days out before?
Well, when I don't think anybody wants to play three games in 7 days at this point. Obviously, we'll catch them on the a couple of days after. For them, I think it could be an advantage if they play well on Tuesday. But their turnaround time's going to be quick. So I know it's unfortunate for them that they have that. But, we're not looking at it. They have a big advantage over us.
Ray forced into the starting lineup the other night. Are we keeping her there? Are you going back to the way things were with her back on the bench?
I honestly have not even thought about that yet. Ray came in and did what she needed to do. And having her out there on the court is good for us. Having Tess back out there on the court would be good for us. We need all of our options. And, without Kian in there, we're going to have to be a little bit more creative on what we're going to do and what our lineups might look like.
Jordan Horson has got a piece of the blocking game recently. Has there been anything behind the scenes that's allowed her to kind of track better or get in on that action?
I think she's a player that when she gets one, when she blocks one, she wants to grab another one somewhere. She's got pretty good timing, and I think for her, very similar to Tamari, just in a different position, just great length and good athleticism, and it puts her in position to be able to block shots. She's played pretty well off the ball or on the ball. Her defense has been really good. She keeps people in front of her. And if somebody gets an angle, she's a lot of times tall enough and athletic enough to recover and get a blocked shot.
Is she kind of an emotional leader for your team out there? Because, you said at Vanderbilt, the team felt more confident with her on the court, and she seems to really, help shift momentum when she starts to play well? Would you consider her kind of an emotional leader?
Maybe I hadn't thought about that. Jordan gives her teammates confidence because she makes plays. I think when and it's not just she has to go score to make those plays. She can get somebody open. She can get a block shot. She can grab a rebound. Because she makes so many plays, they gain confidence from her throughout the game, throughout the play, and it's not just one thing. But also, I think, you know, she's so competitive. I think they draw from that as well. We've got a lot of players out there that are playing with great competitiveness, and I think our emotion level has been pretty steady thus far, not too high, not too low, and I think that's been good for us. So if she is our emotional leader, we want to keep her as steady as possible because I think that's a happy place for our team.
Earlier in the season, you guys played some tight games, some tough games. How is that going to help you down the stretch?
Well, I think the close games that we played early this season have already helped us. I think, you know, you gain confidence from all those experiences, and you can always build on those. And, you know, our team, because of those situations, we've not panicked. I think our team has been able to play through adversity. I think they've, played strong and played with confidence in a lot of games that, you know, may not have been going our way the whole game. And you know, to be able to shift the momentum in a second half, or shift the momentum at some point during the game, that's not easy to do, and our team's done it multiple times. And I think a lot of that has to do with just the confidence that we've had throughout this season.
Coach, with such a strong start and a lot of people talking about the Lady Vols being one of the greatest teams they've seen this season, how can this team continue to grow and get better?
Well, we just watched film from Georgia, and, you know, you're not going to say so because you guys pick up the stat sheet. I think we can do a better job rebounding. I know, right? I think we can be a little bit better offensively with our efficiency, maybe a little bit more consistent there. I think defensively we can do a better job avoiding screens. So there are definitely ways. If our players begin to think that they have arrived and they've figured it all out, we will make sure to show them where we can still grow. And I think that's been such a positive for this team. They have not let all of this go to their head. They have really locked in every day to try to get better. And our film sessions have been really good for that. We talk about, hey, this was good. We talk about what's good. But we also talk about, y'all, this is not going to work in a month. And so that's a way that we learn as a team in the film room.
Is there a point where you can say you've arrived? Is that a thing that a coach can ever say?
No. Okay. Nobody's going to say that. No coach is ever going to give that up. So, only one team finishes the season where they want to finish. Only one. And maybe in that moment that coach gets to say, we've arrived.
Kelly, I know you don't pay attention to the rankings. Like you said, you kind of block out the noise and help keep you focused. But for you, what would it mean if you got the projected one seed and you felt that for your program and your team earned that?
Well, the way I'm looking at it, if we did get that, then we have continued to play well at the end of the season. And I think that's what I'm worried about. Really, and the numbers are great. Don't get me wrong. You want to be ranked high. You want to have those opportunities. Definitely want to host. Just so many of those things. But when it comes to when you start talking about the NCAA tournament and you start talking about, you know, one versus a four or you know, whoever you're going to play, whatever number you are, to me it's more about the matchup. Is that going to be a good matchup for your team? And what we're trying to do right now is play through all these different matchups, find a way to be positive and find a way to be productive against every opponent, because when it counts, when it matters in the NCAA tournament, you have to figure it out or you go home. And hopefully we're, you know, building our resume to be able to do that.
Comment from Lady Vols coach Kelly Harper. Tennessee takes on Auburn tonight, 8 o'clock at Auburn. So there's a conference that says it just means more. That conference, well, obviously the SEC. I was reading an article about what they did in 2021, the 2021 year, calendar year. They won a national championship in football. That was Alabama. Remember, that was January of 2021. Georgia won it this year, but 2021. Baseball, Mississippi State won the national championship. In rifle, Kentucky won it. Arkansas won the indoor track title. Kentucky won the volleyball title. Ole Miss won women's golf. Florida won men's tennis. There were four programs that won their first national championship. Also in men's tennis, Florida won the singles title. Tennessee won the doubles title with Adam Walton and Pat Harper. You also had the Golden Spikes winner. You had a Heisman Trophy winner. You had the NCAA Gymnast of the Year as well. Vince, it may be hard for the SEC to repeat what they did in 2021, but they're off to a pretty good start.
Well, and technically wasn't the Heisman Trophy winner in 2021?
Yeah,
well?
I mentioned that. Heisman Trophy. Oh, yeah, I'm talking about Devontae Smith. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, yep. It's ridiculous. I mean, now we've seen the SEC have success in the Olympic sports as well, but now you're starting to see some of the other sports that, you know, maybe they haven't been number one in, you know, rise up a little bit. And just to add to the depth of the championships, baseball and football has always been there, but just impressive to continue to stockpile all those titles.
Yeah, let me correct myself too. It was Bryce Young that won it. The 2021 calendar year was Bryce
Correct.
Young for the Heisman.
Correct.
So,
yeah.
It was the year before Devontae. But yeah, so it was just amazing when I was reading this about all the success they had, and certainly that gives Greg Sankey a whole lot to brag about in terms of what this conference has been able to do. I saw some numbers on the transfer portal I wanted to talk with you about, and Brett Barrett, our friend, does a really good job with some of this research. But in the transfer portal, 57.6% of the Power 5 scholarship players that went in the portal August the 1st have found a new home. 57.6%. What does that mean? Almost 43% haven't. 40% of the group of five that entered the portal August 1 have a new school. Do those numbers concern you about the number of players that get left out in the cold?
For sure. I'm also not surprised by them. And I also think that those need to be shared with players on a regular basis. And they need to know those numbers. They need to be educated on them and not just presented to the media or fans. Those are numbers that need to be used for education of what you're at risk of doing if you leave and don't find a new home. Like everyone around them is probably telling them, oh, you know, you'd start at 10 other SEC schools or whatever. You think you can, but that's not always a reality. And these kids end up leaving, having a home with scholarships that will, you know, renew each year. And leave that and then not find a home, and then there they are, just left out in the cold. That's, to me, the biggest thing, Jimmy. Not that those numbers are so high of people that aren't there, but that those need to be used as a warning and a lesson for those players that think about moving.
I do think there are good things about the transfer portal. I think if there's a coaching change and you're a quarterback and a coach comes in and wants to run a different offense, I get that. I get a lot of things about it. The two things that concern me are the number of people that get left out in the cold. The other one that concerns me is I think that it's too easy for players to quit. At the first sign of anything that's difficult or a coach chewing them out, they want to tuck their tail and run. I don't like that easy avenue to quit. Another stat, 408 in the transfer portal from Power 5, 47.6% found their way to another Power 5 school. Less than half. 38.9% went to Group of 5. 13.5% went to the FCS, a lower level. I would have thought of those that found a home that more than 50% would have gone to a Power 5. I was wrong about that. What do you think of that number?
Yeah, not really. I guess because I think when a fair amount of those Power Five portal players. There are some marquee players, established players that, you know, decide to leave the Spencer Rattlers and some, you know, some guys like that, that end up finding a home. But a lot of times it's Power Five players that maybe haven't gotten established yet, and so the jury is still out on them. They'll get some opportunities, but not everyone is going to get those opportunities. So it doesn't surprise me that for some guys that they have to go down a level because they really haven't been able to show what they can do when they decide to transfer. The ones that it's crazy, Jimmy, because players that aren't established out of the Power Five, even if they had good recruiting rankings, sometimes they have a harder time finding opportunities at other Power Five schools than those out of Group of Five or FCS that have been productive already, maybe have some maturity to them, and are looking to move up.
Well, and watch this. Of the Tennessee players, what have they had, like eight of them that have left recently? Mm-hmm. Very few of them are going to wind up at Power 5 schools, in part because they're probably just not quite good enough. Now, the year before was the exception because there were a lot of really good players that left Tennessee. But of this most recent group, very few of those will find a Power 5 home, I think. So, and they just got buried on the depth chart. And no offense, but like a Chris Akparogene, I don't see him at a Power 5 school. So, all right.
No. Yeah, I think I think he's probably going to John mentioned, I don't know if he's definitely going there, but maybe a link to Jackson State that Deion Sanders had had some interest in him there.
Yeah. Okay. All right. When we come back, we're looking forward to this, an interview with Lee Smith. He's a product of Powell High School. Went to Tennessee, didn't work out, went to Marshall, played in the NFL for 11 years. He's just retired. He's got an incredible story to tell, and we look forward to visiting with him about that. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Himes. Sports Talk, 99.1, the sports animal.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.